Hello and welcome to the Verity Podcast for Saturday, April 13th, 2024. We're the only podcast that keeps separating the fact from the narrative spin. I'm Adam Clark.
And I'm Eric Steiner. Let's look at today's top stories. The U.S. and Israel brace for a potential Iranian attack on Israeli soil.
House Speaker Mike Johnson and Donald Trump are convening at Mar-a-Lago.
Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky slams Western allies.
Ethiopian officials arrest 13 in connection to the murder of a key opposition figure.
President Joe Biden pledges to defend the Philippines in the South China Sea.
A Democratic senator urges President Joe Biden to ban Chinese electric vehicles.
Carrie Lake lobbies for a repeal of Arizona's 1864 abortion law.
The UK returns looted artifacts to Ghana through a long-term loan.
Colombia's capital rations water to its 9 million residents.
And the interpreter of Major League Baseball icon Shohei Ohtani is in custody for stealing $16 million to cover gambling debts.
The U.S. and Israel prepare for a potential Iranian attack on Israeli soil. The facts are agreed upon by the Wall Street Journal, BBC News, New York Times, Times of Israel, Haaretz, and New York Post. The U.S. warned that Iran could attack Israeli soil soon, with U.S. government employees in Israel advised not to travel outside central Israel, Jerusalem, and Beersheba. Iran is expected to retaliate for what it says was an Israeli airstrike on its embassy in Syria, killing several. As Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu stated that Israel is, quote, prepared to meet all of its security needs, the U.S. Commander of Operations in the Middle East, General Eric Kurila, traveled to the country due to recent developments. The UK has told its citizens to consider leaving Israel and Palestine if it is safe to do so, with India warning its people not to travel to Iran or Israel till further notice. France evacuated its diplomats from Iran and urged its people not to go to Iran, Israel, or Lebanon. An Iranian source said Tehran has yet to make a decision. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin on Thursday emphasized the U.S.'s ironclad support against Iran. A U.S. military official said the Pentagon is moving additional assets to the Middle East to strengthen its deterrence capabilities and protect its forces. It did not specify which assets. As Israel prepares for an Iranian attack, reports indicate that the Iranian operation could involve hundreds of drones as well as missiles directed at Israeli military sites.
Thank you, Eric, for the facts on our first story today. I'm going to start our first round of narrative spins, beginning with a pro-establishment narrative, and it's provided by Atlantic Council. While Iran is likely to retaliate in some capacity, probably by continuing its trend of using proxy fighters to hit U.S. or Israeli assets abroad, it has neither the military might nor the political strength to enter its people into a full-scale war with the West. Israel and its allies have also already transported their citizens to safe zones and prepared their defense mechanisms, which means Iran has two choices: play small ball or make a larger move and risk being crushed by a Western counterattack.
The establishment critical narrative comes from Middle East Eye. Iran knows full well that it can't go to war with Israel and the U.S., but that doesn't mean that its regional neighbors are going to help the West instigate further escalation. Gulf states such as Saudi Arabia, Kuwait, and the UAE are currently working to keep the U.S. from launching any counterattacks from its bases located in their countries. The entire region has no desire for war, but Israel deserves to face an equal response without drawing the rest of the world into this mess.
The statistical nerds at the Metaculous Prediction Community think that there's a 49% chance that Iran will carry out a deadly attack within Israel before May 1st of 2024. This is kind of like during Halloween, you tell your kids, hey, don't go trick-or-treating in that one area, you know, that part of town, don't go trick-or-treating right over there, that's a bad area. That's like all the world is telling everybody, don't go trick-or-treating in Israel.
That's right, razor blades in the apples over there.
For sure. Mike Johnson and Donald Trump are convening at Mar-a-Lago. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, CNN, Newsmax, Financial Times, Fox News, and Politico. In a notable meeting, Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson and Donald Trump are convening at Mar-a-Lago, their first public meeting since Johnson ascended to the speakership in November. The main topics of discussion include so-called election integrity, reportedly drawing attention to Trump's characterization of state proposals and lawsuits that allegedly would allow non-citizens to vote despite existing federal bans. While Johnson proposed the visit to Mar-a-Lago long ago, this meeting has gained further importance recently as a conservative representative, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Republican from Georgia, threatens to strip him of the gavel. Less than 6 months into the job, Mike Johnson has been under fire from his own conference as he remains at odds with Trump on many issues, particularly Ukraine aid and the reauthorization of a surveillance bill. According to former Republican House Speaker Newt Gingrich, this high-profile joint appearance shows that Trump supports the leadership of Johnson. On Thursday, Politico reported that the former president and strongest GOP leader opposes the constant motion to vacate threats and GOP house fighting.
Adam, thank you for the facts. The first spin of this story is a Republican narrative coming from PJ Media. On top of not being the solution, ousting Mike Johnson from speakership would effectively be counterproductive. After the chaos that followed Representative Matt Gaetz' motion to remove Kevin McCarthy, the GOP cannot afford more turmoil ahead of an already uphill battle in the 2024 election.
Blaze Media is going to provide us with the conservative narrative. Mike Johnson has already abandoned his constituents to work alongside the Democrats. So what's the point in worrying about how his removal could impact future House leadership? As it stands, it would be better, or at least less harmful, for Republicans to vote him out and prevent further bad legislation.
And the nerds from Attaculous say there's a 65% chance that Mike Johnson will remain Speaker for all of this year. Zelensky slams his allies and Russia intensifies its attacks in Ukraine. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the Institute for the Study of War, Al Jazeera, CNN, and Associated Press. After Russia once again targeted Ukraine's energy infrastructure in missile and drone strikes on Thursday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky reiterated his country's need for Western military aid, slamming allies for engaging in, quote, lengthy discussions and turning a blind eye. According to Ukraine's Air Force, Russia launched a combination of 42 missiles and 40 drones on Thursday. Of these, 39 drones were shot down and 18 missiles were destroyed. The Institute for the Study of War, a U.S. military think tank that tracks the conflict, said the attacks caused notable and likely long-term damage to Ukraine's energy infrastructure, reporting that a number of energy facilities were either destroyed or damaged in as many as 9 regions of Ukraine. Among them was the Tripilska thermal power plant in Kyiv, which was completely destroyed by Russian strikes. The plant's owner, Centrenergo, the largest provider of electricity to the regions of Kyiv, Cherkasy, and Zhytomyr, said it lost 100% of its power generation capabilities. Ukraine's persisting munitions shortages, coupled with Russia's increasing use of sophisticated glide bombs, has also led to further Russian gains on the battlefield. After capturing Avdiivka in February, Russian troops are now 6 miles west of the Donetsk city. They are also advancing west of Bakhmut, captured in May last year, towards the Donetsk city of Chasiv Yar. Meanwhile, in a move likely to be unpopular with Ukrainians, the country's parliament on Thursday passed a law that aims to plug the shortage in troop numbers by calling up more soldiers to fight. While yet to be approved by Zelensky, he last week approved a measure that lowered the conscription age from 27 to 25.
Thanks, Eric. The spins are going to begin with Ukranska Pravda providing the pro-Ukraine narrative. These Russian attacks, including on Ukraine's largest power station in Kyiv, simply would not have happened if Ukraine had the weapons it needed to defend itself, including more U.S.-made Patriot missile defense systems. Ukraine needs these weapons as soon as possible.
The pro-Russian narrative comes from TASS. For humanitarian reasons, Russia did not strike Ukraine's energy infrastructure throughout the winter. However, after a series of Ukrainian attacks on Russian territory, including on the Crocus Concert Hall in Moscow, the country was forced to respond. It's now up to Ukrainian people to see sense and call for negotiations.
Eric, the nerds think that there's a 2% chance that Ukraine will sever the land bridge between Crimea and Russia before 2025. Well, that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community.
Zelensky, sever that bridge now!
Sever the bridge!
Sever!
News from Ethiopia, where 13 have been arrested over the killing of an Oromo opposition figure. Here are the facts as agreed upon by All Africa, Sahara Reporters, BBC News, Voice of America, Reuters, and Associated Press. Police in Ethiopia announced on Thursday the arrest of 13 people in connection with the killing of Beit Ergesa, a political officer with the Oromo Liberation Front, or the OLF, with some reports suggesting that two of his siblings are among the detainees. Beit, whose body was found on the roadside of his hometown Mekai on Wednesday morning, local time, was reportedly abducted from his hotel room and gunned down the previous night. An outspoken critic of the government, Beit was arrested multiple times in recent years, including in February alongside French journalist Antoine Galindo, for allegedly conspiring to incite unrest. The death of the prominent opposition figure prompted calls at home and abroad for a full investigation, including from the independent state-affiliated Ethiopian Human Rights Commission and the U.S. Department of State. This comes as a Reuters investigation published earlier this year claimed that a secretive committee of senior federal officers, known as Cori Naginya, has ordered extrajudicial killings and illegal detentions in Oromia to end the insurgency. The former guerrilla movement OLF laid down its weapons in 2018 after signing a peace deal with the federal government. However, its former armed wing, the Oromo Liberation Army, has continued the fighting.
Adam, thanks for those facts. Narrative A is the first spin. It comes from Burkina, Ethiopia. In light of the Reuters findings about the government-run secret killing squad operating in Oromia, it's obvious that security forces are behind the murder of Beit Ergesa. Oromo political and cultural figures have long been subject to a systematic effort to silence dissent.
Addis Standard provides us with a narrative B. It's irresponsible and outrageous that some political entities have decided to exploit the shocking killing of Beit Ergesa to promote anti-government propaganda and try to compensate for political losses. Investigations are underway to bring perpetrators to justice.
The Metaculous Prediction Community has a nerd narrative for this story. They say there's an 18% chance that Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed will experience a significant leadership disruption before 2025. President Biden pledges to defend the Philippines in the South China Sea. Here are the facts as agreed upon by the official website of the White House, the U.S. Department of Defense, Associated Press, Rappler, the Japan Times, and FMPRC. U.S. President Joe Biden on Thursday reasserted America's ironclad commitment to defending the Philippines in the South China Sea. Under their 1951 Mutual Defense Treaty, the U.S. is bound to defend the Southeast Asian nation if Philippine forces, vessels, or aircraft ever come under an armed attack in the Pacific. Biden hosted his Philippine counterpart Ferdinand Marcos Jr. and Japan's Fumio Kishida on Thursday for a first-ever trilateral summit amid mounting tensions with China in the Indo-Pacific, including incidents between the Philippines and China's coast guards. The three leaders expressed serious concerns over China's dangerous and aggressive behavior in the South China Sea and urged Beijing to abide by the legally binding 2016 arbitration ruling that determined the shoal lies within the Philippines' exclusive economic zone. They also agreed to ramp up joint naval exercises and Coast Guard cooperation, as well as to launch the Luzon Economic Corridor, the first infrastructure project in the region under the Partnership for Global Infrastructure and Investment. In response, a spokesperson for Beijing's foreign ministry claimed that China's actions were completely in accordance with international law, adding that, quote, firm measures would be taken to protect China's sovereignty.
Thanks, Eric. The spin's going to start with the anti-China narrative provided by Inquirer. This trilateral summit has sent a clear message to China that it can't walk all over its neighbors. A growth in relations between the three countries is a strategic advantage, as well as a necessity to counter PRC meddling. With the help of two of the world's three largest economies, the Philippines can finally take a stand against continued Chinese aggression.
The Global Times comes back with a pro-China narrative. Tricked by the fickle promises of a self-serving power that's seeking to use it as a vessel for American interests, the Philippines has decided to side with the U.S. despite its historical ties to China. By following America's path, the Philippines has increased its chances of being placed in harm's way as part of the West's wider hegemonic game to undermine China's prosperity.
But the nerds think that there's an 18% chance that there will be an armed conflict between the Philippines and China, causing at least 100 deaths before January 1st of 2050. And that's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. Continuing with news about President Biden, a Democratic senator suggests that he should ban PRC electric vehicles. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, the office of Senator Sherrod Brown, Inside Trade, and ET Auto. Senator Sherrod Brown, the Democrat from Ohio, urged President Joe Biden in a video on X on Thursday to stop all imports of Chinese electric vehicles to the U.S., saying they pose an existential threat to the American auto industry. The White House announced in February that it was investigating whether Chinese cars pose a national security threat due to their internet connectivity and ability to collect sensitive data and record U.S. infrastructure using cameras and sensors. Brown, who represents the car-producing state of Ohio, is running for a fourth term in November and warned that Chinese subsidized electric vehicles could flood the U.S. market, cheating the American auto industry. The number of Chinese cars in the U.S. is currently quite low due to a 27.5% tax on PRC-manufactured vehicles. China is competing with Japan to be the largest vehicle exporter worldwide. In his warning to President Biden, Senator Brown used Europe as a cautionary example, as Chinese-made vehicles accounted for more than 20% of European EV sales last year. Europe is beginning to look at Chinese EV subsidies. While the Biden administration did not immediately comment, it indicated earlier this year it might hike tariffs on PRC-made EVs.
Adam, thank you for those facts. The first spin for this story is an anti-China narrative coming from the office of Sherrod Brown. There's no way for American manufacturers to compete on an equal playing field with subsidized Chinese EVs. Allowing these cars on U.S. roads would be a major blow to the U.S. auto industry, destroying the United Auto Workers and the union's ability to boost wages. These PRC-made vehicles also represent a significant national security concern, since the Chinese Communist Party will be able to collect a considerable amount of sensitive data. President Biden urgently needs to ban Chinese EVs.
That spin's going to be countered with the pro-China narrative, and that's provided by Global Times. The outlandish notion that PRC EVs pose a national security threat to the U.S. is an accusation China is all too familiar with when Washington attempts to shut down Chinese companies or industries without providing any evidence. The U.S. is once again using protectionism to defend its hegemonic interests while limiting the competitiveness of others. It's not acceptable to use non-market measures to avoid global market competition.
And the nerds from Metaculus say there's a 60% chance a legacy automaker will go bankrupt before 2030. Carrie Lake is lobbying for a repeal of the Arizona 1864 abortion law. The facts are agreed upon by the New York Times, Politico, ABC News, One America, and CNN. Carrie Lake, who's running for U.S. Senate in Arizona after losing her race for the governorship in 2020, has emerged as a prominent Republican opponent of Tuesday's state Supreme Court ruling that permitted enforcement of an 1864 law banning nearly all abortions. The 1864 law bans abortion from conception, with no exceptions for rape or incest. The only exception is in the case of the mother's life being in danger. Lake, previously a television news anchor, has reportedly been calling legislators in the GOP-controlled state House and Senate to lobby them about repealing the law. Former President Donald Trump, the presumptive GOP presidential nominee, has also said the court, quote, went too far. Previously, Lake said in a 2022 interview shortly after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade and reversed federal protection of abortion access, that she supported what she called a, quote, great law. Aides have said Lake was speaking about the current 15-week ban in Arizona. Lake earlier this week responded to the court's ruling by issuing a statement calling on Governor Katie Hobbs and the state legislature to pass a common-sense solution to the abortion issue. On Wednesday, Republicans in the state legislature recessed their session before Democratic Representative Matt Gress could call a vote to repeal the law.
Thanks for the facts, Eric. Here are the spins, beginning with the Democratic narrative provided by MSNBC. Lake, who has denied election results and promoted conspiracy theories, cannot be trusted for a good-faith position on this issue. She lost her governor's race by a slim margin and is desperate to seem moderate enough to gain a few votes in her Senate race. But what she should be saying isn't that the 1864 law should be repealed, but explained why her stance has changed since her 2022 interview. She owes the voters at least that much.
The Republican narrative comes from Town Hall. It's easy to see where Lake's position on abortion has shifted for the better and in line with much of the American electorate. Obviously, there must be more exceptions than the 1864 law provides. By overturning Roe v. Wade, the Supreme Court rightly turned responsibility for abortion restrictions to the states, but the states should determine their abortion laws with the will of the people in mind.
Well, the nerds still think that there's a 3% chance that elective abortion will be banned nationally in the U.S. before the year 2030, according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. The U.K. returns looted artifacts to Ghana. Here are the facts as agreed upon by BBC News, Pulse Ghana, Tribune Online, and Guardian. The U.K. has returned, by way of a long-term loan, 32 royal artifacts from the Asante Kingdom to present-day Ghana, more than 150 years after they were looted during the Anglo-Asante Wars. The return follows the signing of a loan deal between the British Museum, the Victoria and Albert Museum, and the current traditional ruler of the Asante people. The mostly gold objects comprise 15 pieces from the British Museum and 17 from the Victoria and Albert Museum, and are initially on loan for 3 years with the possibility of renewal for a further 3 years. The artifacts, including a golden peace pipe, a sword of state, and golden badges, will be displayed at the Palace Museum in the Asante's regent capital, Kumasi, in May, as part of the Asante Haine's Silver Jubilee celebrations. Commenting on the artifacts' temporary return, Nana Ofurata Aim, a special advisor to Ghana's Minister of Culture, emphasized their spiritual importance and described the regalia as part of the soul of the nation. The Asante Kingdom was once one of the most powerful and significant states in West Africa. In 1874, British troops launched a punitive expedition against the Asante, plundering Kumasi and looting most of the palace treasures.
Adam, thanks for the facts. The first spin is Narrative A, coming from the Art newspaper. This loan is an acknowledgement by the UK of the artifact's spiritual and cultural significance to the Asante people. Although the objects form only a part of the Asante collections, this loan includes most of the key works to right some of the wrongs of Britain's colonial past.
Africa News is providing us with Narrative B. This is a welcomed first step, but it must be seen as a first step toward the full-time return of the artifacts. Otherwise, this is an embarrassment. The wounds of the past will only really begin to heal once the Asante cultural heritage returns to Ghana for good.
The nerds say there's a 1% chance that Kwasi Kwarteng will become UK Conservative Party leader before January 1st, 2030. That's according to the Metaculous Prediction Community. The latest with the Colombia drought, Bogota begins rationing water. Here are the facts as agreed upon by CNN, The Print, CBS, The City Paper Bogota, BBC News, and World Crunch. Authorities in Colombia's capital, Bogota, began rationing water for its 9 million residents on Thursday as a severe drought intensified by El Nino has left reservoirs at near-record lows. The city has been divided into 9 zones, each of which will be subjected to water cuts for a 24-hour period on a rotational basis. However, hospitals and schools will have continuous access to water. Water levels in the Chingaza Reservoir, which provides 70% of Bogota's drinking water, have reportedly dropped to less than 17%, the lowest in 4 decades. The rationing will continue until rainfall, expectedly in late April, which the authorities anticipate can refill the reservoir. Mayor Carlos Fernando Galan said Bogota could not afford to waste a single drop. President Gustavo Petro, criticizing Colombia's agriculture and construction industries, said he had initiated a substantial change to protect the country's water resources over the next 3 decades. Besides Bogota, some major cities of the world, including Cape Town, Sao Paulo, and Brasilia, have been facing an acute water crisis in recent years. Climate researchers have suggested that climate change has been an exacerbating factor.
Thank you, Eric. The spin's going to start with the Narrative A provided by the Bogota Post. Bogota's water supply infrastructure has been plagued by systemic problems and aggravated by the authorities' unresponsiveness. Amid the government's ambitious aims to ensure universal water access by 2030, concerns remain over investment and institutional accountability. This systemic governance problem underscores many of Colombians' daily struggles with water access and the urgent need for sustainable solutions.
Narrative B comes from the Nature Conservancy. As Colombia's population increases, urbanizes, and consumes more water daily, its natural water sources face growing threats from agriculture, development, and climate stress. In places like Chingaza National Park, pressures from human activities necessitate conservation efforts. Multiple initiatives are already working on preserving water sources and enhancing governance. Much more needs to be done, but progress is being made.
Well, the nerds think there's a 50% chance that humans will be able to capture water from volatile sources in the inner solar system by September of 2050. And that's according to the Bataculus Prediction Community. Japanese interpreter charged with stealing $16 million from Otani. Here are the facts as agreed upon by ESPN, CBS, The Ringer, and NBC. Major League Baseball star Shohei Ohtani's longtime interpreter was charged Thursday with bank fraud, as federal prosecutors accuse Ipe Mitsuhara of stealing more than $16 million from the Los Angeles Dodgers two-way player. Mitsuhara turned himself in to federal officials on Friday with a bond set for $25,000. In a 37-page complaint filed in a California federal court, prosecutors claimed Mitsuhara between November of 2021 and January of 2024 transferred millions from Otani's bank account to pay operations of an illegal sportsbook. Matthew Bowyer and his associate are the reported bookmakers. Mitsuhara allegedly developed a severe gambling addiction, with the Southern California bookies continually extending his credit. In total, Mitsuhara won some $142 million but lost $183 million, accruing $40.7 million in losses. Mitsuhara had worked with Ohtani as his interpreter and de facto manager since he entered Major League Baseball in 2018 with the Los Angeles Angels. He was fired by the Dodgers after this story made headlines on March 20th. In 26 months, Mitsuhara, who could be facing 30 years in prison, reportedly placed a total of 19,000 bets. He admitted to, quote, technically, stealing from Ohtani in his text messages with Bowyer. The complaint details Mitsuhara's efforts to pose as Ohtani and hide the ongoing proceedings. Ohtani denied any knowledge of the situation, and prosecutor Martin Estrada said last season's American League MVP has, quote, cooperated fully and completely in the investigation. Major League Baseball is conducting its own investigation.
Adam, thank you for those facts. Narrative A is the first spin. It comes from The Athletic. When this story broke, the public was quick to crucify baseball's brightest star without any knowledge of the situation. Weeks later, it appears Ohtani is actually the victim in this situation. Thursday's court filing shows the extreme depths of Mitsuhara's betrayal of his friend and boss. Ohtani should be rightfully exonerated in both MLB and the court of public opinion.
Narrative B is provided by Jay Moriarty. Baseball has always been sensitive to matters involving gambling, so it shouldn't turn a blind eye to Ohtani's potential involvement in this scandal. Baseball must probe how Ohtani didn't notice the money missing, and whether he knew more about his friend's gambling issues. Ohtani's celebrity shouldn't protect him from crucial scrutiny.
Finally, the nerds say there's a 50% chance that the last baseball World Series will be played by August of 2091. Thanks for listening to the Verity Podcast for Saturday, April 13th, 2024.
Each day we use machine learning to read about 5,000 articles from about 100 newspapers and figure out which ones are about the same stories. For each major story, our editorial team then extracts both the key facts that all articles agree on and the key narratives where the articles differ.
Find out more at Verity.news and download the Verity app on the Apple App Store or Google Play. For Adam Clark, I'm Eric Steiner, inviting you to join us next time on the Verity Podcast.